Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Figure It, the podcast where we look at the facts and statistics on Cyprus and figure out what it all means. My name is Fiona Mullen and I'm the Director of Sapienta Economics. So tariffs have been the name of the game of the past few weeks. On the 2nd of April, the US under President Trump announced a whole bunch of tariffs on a whole bunch of countries for the EU, which includes Cyprus, that's 20%. Then a week later, he postponed it for 90 days, but it still looks like we're going to have it. And I wanted to look at it from a slightly different angle from everything else we've already heard in the past few weeks. So I've brought my friend Alex Apostolidis onto the programme to talk about tariffs from a historical perspective and also where today's tariffs might lead us.
Hello.
Welcome. So Alex has a number of hats these days, but I'd say the one where which I know I've known him best for is he's an academic economic historian. You can say more about yourself if you like, Alex, but you've always kind of looked, what I like about you is always looked at economics from a historic perspective about what happened before. Anything else you want to say about what you're doing these days?
Well, I just to add, I'm very looking forward reading your report, Fiona, about tariffs that should come out as well. and that my emphasis and focus was always Cyprus and the Mediterranean. So especially the period of 20s and 30s when the latest until today tariff wave came and settled in the global economy. So I feel it's a great opportunity to look at history and see what can we learn and what is different today, maybe.
Yeah. So when was the last time we had a big whack of tariffs, especially from the US? You said 1920s,
yes,
or something?
After the First World War, globalization didn't start in the 50s and didn't start yesterday. Globalization has been a very long process, but it goes through peaks and troughs. It's perhaps its previous biggest peak before today was just before the First World War. With the end of the First World War, a lot of new states were created that had to find income, and they found income through tariffs. And then when you add nationalism to that and the global Great Depression, a lot of countries, including the US, responded to the Great Depression by adding tariffs and protectionism. The US wasn't the first, but it certainly was probably the most severe in that period, starting in the early 30s. And at that time, the big defender of free trade, which was the Britain, followed with the imperial tariff, which was the, if you want, its first retreat from free trade for 100 years.
Right. So basically anything outside the empire got whacked with import
taxes? The empire got whacked with import taxes, but anything outside the empire got whacked with substantially more import taxes, as in what we see Trump trying to do with picking countries that will have less tariffs than others.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of similarities in that period to today. One of them is the rising nationalism and disillusionment from policymakers towards globalization. Because I would say globalization disillusioned a lot of groups earlier. We remember anti-globalization groups usually tied with the broad left, but now we see policymakers being disillusioned with globalization. That has a lot of resonance with what we saw in the early 30s.
And this whole perception that global trade somehow makes you worse off is the general thrust of this.
I think the best way to describe it is Branko Milanovic's globalization elephant. If you imagine an elephant and he has this trunk pointing upwards, right, and you imagine the sections of the elephant being the poorest in society globally to the richest, those who benefited most were the ultra rich from globalization and the middle class in developing countries such as India and China. And then there's that dip, which is how, if you want, the middle class or the lower middle class in developed economies, advanced economies, feel they haven't gotten enough. So if you want, for me, it's the globalization elephant doing a comeback, as in revenge, like people who felt that they were not benefiting fully from globalization. They're using their iPhones, which is a fully globalized product, to type their anger towards it and support putting tariffs, even if I think in their heart of heart, they know they will affect them. They have this secret hope or desire that it will damage them less than others.
It's interesting. I remember looking into this a long time ago about average incomes in the US and or wages, I think it was. And everybody's was going up, but the Asians were going faster than anybody else. And actually, so it was by, you know, let's say ethnicity. So African Americans were still lower than white Americans, but they were growing more quickly. And so probably this is where some of the...
I actually think it's more, let's think of what globalization is, right? Globalization allows free movement of labor, capital, and goods. And the one that's more mobile is capital. So it will always be more able to take the opportunities. So those who own the capital will get more from globalization than labor, which might feel itself in competition from developing countries. What's really changed this last day, this last, I would say, 30 years, and I think shifted the thinking away from globalization, wrongly, I have to say, but it has, it's that now the service sector is under threat. And therefore, what you thought was safe jobs, insurance, operator, call operator on phones, all that is also being
writing
globalized.
For a living.
and that is really affecting people. However, I think we need to understand that, especially in small economies like Cyprus, you know, we are by definition small and open. We cannot really be closed. We are not big enough. So historically, any retreat from globalization, especially in trade, has affected Cyprus quite severely, usually in indirect ways. Indirect ways. We could go all the way back to the Knights, if you want, and the Lusignans. But really, Cyprus has been always benefiting when it can place itself between trading goods and services of between East and West, broad East and West. When that trade is under threat, Cyprus' prosperity is also affected.
Yeah. So let's have a look at Cyprus then. So the, as we know, the Cyprus, if assuming this does go ahead in whatever 90 days is from the 2nd or 9th of April, Cyprus will be subject to the EU rate of 20%. On the good side, it's not, at least not at first sight, particularly harsh unless you're focusing on a single good, I would say. Exports of goods from Cyprus to the US, they were only like 54 million in 2024 out of total exports of 4.2 billion. So it's really small market. The key thing for Cyprus is that, like you said, it's if it starts affecting exports of services, then we're in trouble because something really quite remarkable has happened with the Cyprus economy in the past 10 years is that the United States has ended up as the number one export market for services. So that means it's bigger than tourism because services include tourism. So out of 26 billion exports, which is a lot, exports of services, 4.1 billion is to the US, and which is really remarkable. And then the third largest market, so the US is the biggest market. Once upon a time it was Russia, now it's America. And Ireland is the third. And when you dig into what are they actually selling, it's computer services. So why is Ireland important? Because it's going to be Apple, it's going to be Google, all of those people who base themselves, American companies base themselves in Ireland. I have no idea what these computer services are. I just know it's computer services, mainly software, I think. Could be gaming, could be Forex, I have no idea.
I think I have an answer, at least part of an answer. So I think I remember clearly in the past there was a finance minister when the financial crisis, global financial crisis started in 2008 that said, oh, we have minimal contact with the US and this will not affect Cyprus. And in the end, 5 years later, we really were in the center of the...
Why
I'm bringing this up is like Cyprus is intensely globalized and any reduction on the broader globalization affects Cyprus severely. And the emphasis now is on trade and goods, but you rightly point out that any trade war does not seem, it will not stop in goods if it continues because people will want to attack what the US does export, which is services. At the same time, if you reduce the trade in goods, the willingness to buy dollar denominated assets, financial assets, will go down. So there's no doubt in my mind that financial services and product services, but especially financial services, will be affected if we're kind of like the eye of the storm now with this 90 days and expecting to see what will happen. But, you know, when and if these tariffs become permanent, then we will see a real impact, negative impact on financial services. Now, what I think you're seeing there is the IP box. What I think you're seeing there is a lot of companies are using the tax efficiency purposes, the Cypriot IP box, and therefore selling the IP is registered here and then selling the IP to their conglomerate.
So IP being intellectual property, for those who don't know. So they're developing software here in Cyprus, getting the tax advantage and then selling it back perhaps to their headquarters. Or
Alex Inc. is in the US, with its main market being in the US. Alex Inc. developed a particular intellectual property that's registered in Cyprus. So Alex Inc. Cyprus sells the rights to Alex Inc. US to use that intellectual property. But that's a great example of where we should worry about this global trade war, that it can unravel, right? If for whatever reason, then the US thinks, wait, why are we allowing our companies to do this? Which we have seen, for example, you mentioned Russia before. We saw a substantial pressure on Russian companies back from 2005 onwards, right? To repatriate all the aspects.
But from Russia on these companies,
So, you know, if there is an unraveling of the global service industry, we should expect an impact. And there's not much Cyprus can do on its own, right? Let's be clear. But you know, we should just understand where we might be affected and try and if possible, to modify the EU response.
Yeah. I mean, even if there's no targeting of services as such, if those services are related to, let's say, iPhones or whatever, then they're going to be affected anyway. But then there's the additional problem that, maybe the EU will whack services and that indirectly hits Cyprus and nobody knows because they haven't done their homework. Let's hope they will do their homework this time, unlike in 2013 when they hadn't. But
because you said, let's talk a bit about history too. There's also the impact we haven't seen yet because we don't know which tariffs are permanent and how much. But the impact of trade displacement too, or services displacement, as in, you rightly said, we will, as Cyprus, will be hit by a 20% tariff, expected 22%, if I'm correctly, percent tariff as the EU. Well, countries around us, for example, Turkey, will be hit by 10%. Turkey has a customs union with the EU. So I can see, for example, a trade displacement from the rest of the EU to move to Turkey, because it can still have customs union with the EU, but also export with a substantial less tariff.
Yeah.
We have seen it in Cyprus in the 30s. In the 30s, mid to late 30s, there was an explosion of investment by Jewish funds and Jewish products, because the mandate of Palestine was not under the imperial tariff, and therefore had to pay a full tariff to sell to the UK. So a lot of the things we know, like the orange groves at Limassol and Famagusta and batons, and even some local manufacturing we still love today, like Geo, etc., are in part a development to this tariff diversion. Because Cyprus had an advantage relative to other areas in the region in selling products to the UK.
Let's move on a bit more globally. I think the bigger scary thing about not just tariffs, but the whole uncertainty of economic policy under the current US administration is what it might do to global capital markets, to the dollar, etc. You were saying before we went live about what China's response might be.
Yes, I think people forget that balance of payments has two parts, right? We're focusing on balance in trade, which is, as you said, balancing goods and services. There's also the capital account, which is the balance in capital exchanges. And if you have a deficit in the balance of trade, as in what the US has, it means there's ownership sold of US assets abroad. And the unique privilege of the US is you can sell your currency, you can sell basically a piece of paper, treasuries, right? And people want to hold it. Now, if you reduce that balance of trade deficit, this effort of reducing the deficit will reduce the demand from abroad for buying the dollar and dollar-denominated treasuries.
Let me try and explain that for non-economists. So US has a big trade deficit. That means I'm exporting a lot of dollars in payments to bring in my goods.
Exactly.
And so the net result of that, without going into too much of an economic lesson, is that a lot of dollars are held abroad, right?
Especially I am Chinese China. And I'm selling a lot more to the US than the US sells to me. It means I have a lot more dollars. And therefore, those dollars, I have to get something in dollars. And the unique privilege of the US is it can sell me debt.
Sell its debt, yeah.
The irony, the biggest irony, is thinking that's a problem. I think that's a unique privilege. However, I think extreme hawks, extreme conservative, hyper-conservatives who seem to be in the White House at the moment want to force the government to borrow less by effectively eliminating its attractiveness of the dollar to foreign foreign buyers, which is really dangerous. We've lived through it. If you remember 2013, suddenly our capital account collapsed and what we could import collapsed. It's not a nice thing to happen. But that's the real key of why this trade war is both severe and important to everybody, but also why I think everybody is still underestimating its negative consequences.
Yeah. I mean, normally speaking, if your trade deficit shrinks, it's because you are in a recession.
Yeah, it's a bad thing.
Importantly. So tariffs is sort of forcing, I mean, probably a de facto recession, but in any case, forcing what happens in a recession so that the presumably the trade deficit of the US shrinks, which therefore reduces the demand for dollars abroad. Reduced demand for dollars weakens the dollar. Some people say this is all deliberate in order to weaken the dollar. Some people have even gone so far as saying this is all deliberate catastrophe in order to force everybody to renegotiate their debt with the United States.
Yeah, I would argue that what we are seeing here is the return of bad disproven ideas. And, you know, mercantilism was the idea that created colonialism, where it was a zero-sum game. Trade was seen as either you win or you lose. And therefore, countries developed their own companies, like the British India, East India Company and the Dutch India Company, to fight with each other. They saw trade as a competition. It's been disproven since 200 years that trade can be a win-win. But we never said that there's not losers in that trade. And the losers in that trade can be, for example, the workers in some industries that they cannot relocate, and the owners of those industries who are now facing competition. So what we're seeing is those two groups aligning themselves to imposing a cost to everybody else. And this is the real big thing that people need to understand. It's initially the biggest cost will be borne by maybe the foreign producer who's still importing. But over time, the biggest cost will be borne by the consumer, and reduction in economic growth is a given because there's less interaction happening. So I'm constantly amazed. You said about bad reporting. Well, you were too polite to call it bad reporting, but I'm constantly amazed about people saying possible recession. No, there will be a recession. A recession is mandated by putting tariffs. It's expected. It's part of what's expected. And yet we still see this exuberance by a lot of people trying to sort of pretend that this is just going to affect a small part of the global economy. No, wherever you are in the world, even if just China is the target of these tariffs, it will have a global negative impact to all of us, but especially to consumers in the US.
Yeah. And so worst case scenario is the whole financial system seizes up as well?
I think worst case scenario based on history is the creation of blocs, which was already happening maybe for political reasons. And to be fair, that was what was happening in the 30s. So in the late 30s, we saw the rise of about four or five blocs. There was a gold bloc, and then there was a imperial UK bloc, and then there was a Nazi Germany bloc. And I think maybe we won't have four or five blocs like we used to have, but we will definitely, I think, have at least three blocs. The one bloc is the sort of China axis of what China will do to respond to this threat. The other bloc will be whoever feels they can make a deal with the US. But I think the problem there is that they're not sure how fickle the US is, right?
Yeah.
And then there'll be a third bloc that's committed to free trade as far as possible in this period. So I'm expecting three blocs.
Broadly EU plus, let's
well,
say.
Well, the EU is a bit of a dick on me, because if it does, of course, have free trade within it, but has substantial barriers without. So I don't know how much it could lead this effort. But what's clear now is everyone is in a discovery phase.
Yeah.
And definitely the uncertainty itself is hammering everybody.
Yeah.
But just to remind people though, bad economics or economics do not affect politics and vice versa. And what do I mean by that is, when the First World War started, everyone said, oh, everyone will stop in 6 months because it affects their economies too badly. We're too globalized. Mm-hmm. And yet that horrible thing happened. What I'm saying here is the economic impacts will have political impacts, but we shouldn't expect that the economic impacts being negative will affect the political in a way where they would direct. Like I think both you and I, Fiona, keep saying that for things we hold very dear, like the economics of the Cyprus problem, right? Mm-hmm. But it's good to reiterate to people, the economic policy can affect politics as a whole, but it doesn't direct it.
Yeah. And my worst case scenario is this all ends up in a horribly big fat Third World War before anybody changes their mind about it.
I really hope not, but I think the bet is for small actors, whether economic or political, should be on the international order. Any step away from the international order, I know many Cypriots, for example, of any ilk, feel frustrated about the mainly US or mainly broader Western hegemony. But I would really be afraid, and I'll talk economics that I know more, a world with no hegemony. Right, our experience is that's not a good world for small economies. Right, right. I'd rather see an international order being upheld rather than pray for the current order current order's demise.
Yeah, I wrote about this elsewhere, but I think Cyprus is treading this incredibly delicate line. So the US is obviously wooing Cyprus quite a lot. Militarily and economically, if it's true that we're going to have big data centers here and so on, and yet it's also a member of the EU, so we shall see how that goes.
But about that, let's remember, I think everyone is on pause right now. I think big companies would be very happy to start planning and thinking about these things, but also let's remember we failed to do a tech park for the past 20 years. So for me, it's quite
We still don't have electricity.
Yeah.
Hello.
So for me, real long term, all you can do is make sure you are resilient. And resilience means energy independence. Mm. It means infrastructure independence and quality. It means all these things that we know we had a problem with and we haven't been able to tackle them. And I think that's something we need to remember, that we might be seeing something global, but we know what we need to do to be resilient. It's the hard stuff we failed to do for the past 20 years.
Yes, indeed. Good. On that note, thank you, Alex.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, Fiona.
Pleasure to natter with you on or offline. So Figure It is brought to you by Island Talks. That's the only trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. If you want to help for the overhead costs, you know, website, software and so on, go to islandtalks.fm and I think you can click on support us. That's it from me. Thank you for listening.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.